Long Shot Podcast. I am one of your hosts. I'm Amber Kenny. It's a pleasure to be with you. And I'm here with the other host for the day, Sean Conroy. Sean, how you doing?
How do you do? Yes, I'm well as well. Good. I don't know if you saw that Aaron posted in our Facebook group today. Oh, you're not really on Facebook.
Not really, no.
Aaron posted in our Facebook group today a photo from 10 years ago of us recording our 100th episode in this room where I am right now.
10 years ago was the 100th episode? That's crazy.
100 episodes 10 years ago.
That's insane. That's so crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And now we've done, what, 150?
Right. At least. 27.
But it was just funny to see this picture of, you know, all these young people.
What happened to us?
What the fuck happened to us?
Well, we like to start our show with a segment we call Checking In. Sean, what's going on with you? Checking in.
Well, I talked last week about talking about the fact that I directed a short film recently, and I was
going to tell
that story. But before I even get to that, let me tell you exactly what happened this morning. Now, we should say that we're recording on a Sunday.
Right.
Sunday evening. Afternoon. Late afternoon. Early evening. Dusk. It's dusk.
It's dusk.
It's dusk. So I was awoken this morning, and I say this morning, I was awoken about 11:45 this morning. Probably should have gotten up before that. No, it wasn't that late. But my phone rang, and it was somebody who is involved in editing my short film.
Oh, exciting.
So I got somebody to edit this. Now, one of the difficulties with this short, or any short, or any film, any project like this, is that it balloons in cost on a regular basis.
Right. Things, every time you breathe.
Everything costs money, which it should. Like if somebody's going to do this job or that job. So one of the things I've tried to do is get people who are willing to do things for me for zero, for free.
quality stuff.
No, but I mean, in other words, friends doing favors that I've done.
You're cashing in a favor.
Yeah, right. And so this is a person that I've known for years and years who is a really talented editor and a director and was like, yes, I can edit this for you and you won't have to pay for it and so on and so forth. And then right before, like after the shoot, but before the editing was going to start, they were like, oh, I got a job. I have a job. So I can't edit it, but I will find another editor and I will supervise. So I was fine with that. I was like, okay, at least I have this person who knows what they're doing.
Well, it's nice to have someone who you trust at least vouch for the person, or else it's like almost like Craigslist, you know.
Well, that's how they found somebody was on Craigslist.
Okay.
But no, but yeah, I guess that's true. It's good to have somebody, but even more than that, it's like to have somebody in the process who knows what they're doing, you know? So the reason they were calling me this morning is because, well, and this is the other part, is they got a job and then, so they were like, I can't do it myself. I'll get somebody else to do it. Also, I'm going on vacation to Hawaii. Bye. And that was it. And so I did I'm like in this weird
like limbo.
Yeah. Of like, I don't know what's happening. I don't know, you know, but they found somebody. The reason they were calling this morning is this is why it's hard to tell a story the first time because there's so much backstory. But at the end of the day of shooting, we had all of these files because it was all shot on digital tape of some
sort. You didn't use film?
No, I don't quite understand how. Anyway, it's all on a drive, right? You have a drive with all of your footage, every shot of your footage,
right?
is on a drive. It's been downloaded from the camera and converted into a file that goes into this drive. You have to buy special drives so that you have a drive. So we have the drive with all the stuff on.
Do you have a backup?
Okay, so that's where that's
okay.
Where
you're going. You, oh, you know, okay. Well, Mercury's in retrograde. You got to have everything backed up.
So immediately on the day of the shoot, the drive gets backed up to another drive.
Okay.
And I get one of the drives, and the producer gets the other drive. And the producer says to me, "We keep these 100% separate. They're never in the same room, so that if somebody's house burns down, we still have the
right.
So the call I get this morning from the now editing supervisor, not the actual editor, is that the editor has called and said, "I think we're missing a bunch of files. I don't know where they are. They're not on this drive. Can you check the other drive?" It's like, I can't even remember the labeling, but it was like, it goes from file 4 to file 7. So I think there's some stuff missing. So I'm just waking up and I'm like immediately panicking. I'm like, this is a disaster. We're missing all this footage, whatever, whatever. Or the other thought I had was somebody
just
fucked up.
We just named them wrong.
The files wrong. You know, like it was like, "Oh, this is 4. And then was not paying attention and labeled them. So I call the producer who has the other drive, who looks at it and says, no, they're all here on this drive. So we're okay. We just have to figure out how to get them to." Anyway, it's just funny to me to be sitting here on a Sunday morning, and I literally make 20 phone calls in the course of 30 minutes, you know, of like, okay, so do this with this drive and we'll send it through this. And are we going to FedEx another drive? Like, do we go out and buy another drive and download that drive to this drive and then FedEx that drive to them? And then it was like, no, there's a way. We just have to subscribe to this file service that sends larger files because it's 170. It was this frantic thing, and it's all fine. Everything's fine. But there was definitely a 15-minute period where I was like...
of like fire drill chaos.
But also like, I'm fucked. Like there's...
All of that was for nothing. Yeah.
There's... Because if we didn't have some of the footage, like what do I do? Go in and rewrite the script?
And the cameraman isn't like, "Oh, I'll save that." No. It's gone.
Right. It's gone. But it all worked out. So... for now. And that's how I feel about this whole process.
Until the next emergency.
Yeah, it's like, okay, what's the next thing? And I think, I mean, I screamed for like 5 minutes at the person on the phone, but no, I'm kidding.
No, you didn't.
No. I think I was pretty good about just being like, well, if it happened, it happened. But it was definitely a moment of huge panic. Like inside, internally.
Of course.
This is fucking insane.
Well, it sounds like you're directing a movie. Like, I feel like, I don't think there's ever been one in the history of the world that just goes smoothly. Like the original plan is exactly what happens, and that is it.
So with that in mind, let me tell you how things went.
Yes, please.
So obviously there was a long period of pre-production. I mean, this is a thing that had been brewing literally since before the pandemic. I had a different story in mind.
Right, because the story happened
during the pandemic.
Yeah.
So I had this other story and I was like, I'm going to do this. And it was way more complicated and would have been way more expensive. But then this thing happened and we were talking about it and it was like, why don't we just shoot this?
Right.
And we can use that as proof of concept for the longer version and get people to give us money and talent for that. And then of course, as I discussed last week, I also chose to go out of town for 2 weeks right before the shoot. So I wasn't even here to go through everything. But day of the shoot, it was like, okay, I got somebody to be a PA who I knew would do a great job. And I forget why. Oh, it was the day before the shoot, and we were having issues with, because I was going to use my car for the shoot, but my car was white. And so we had to get a different car, and I was going to get the cinematographer's. We were going to use the cinematographer's car, which was gray and black, and that was a much easier color to use in the shoot. But then the day before the shoot, the cinematographer was like, I just realized that I'm planning to drive the grip truck to the set.
Oh.
I can't drive my car. So right. How are we going to get my car to the set? So then I, in my head, was going through all these iterations.
It's over.
No. Just iterations of like, could I get somebody else's car? So I called.
Right. Do I rent a car for the day?
I texted this PA because I was like, maybe this PA's car could work. But then I immediately felt weird about that. In other words, I texted.
It's asking like too big of a favor when you're already getting a favor from them.
Well, I mean, I'm paying them, but you know, so I texted like, hey, whatever. And then I changed my mind. I was like, never mind. Forget that I don't need anything. And the PA texted me back. It's like, I'm going to this wedding today. It'll be the first time I'm going to a wedding and not drinking in a long time, whatever. At like 4:45 the next morning, because I had to be on set at by 5:15 or something. 4:45, I got a text from the PA who was like, I'm on my way to Starbucks to get coffee. Can I get you anything? Which I thought was super nice, but I also didn't want to like fuck up the whole chain of command of the day, because there's people whose job it is to coordinate what's going on with PAs and stuff. And I was like, I don't want this person feeling like I'm taking over, you know? So anyway, it was this weird thing where I was like, no. I'll see you at the set, and please don't approach me when we're there.
Don't look at me. talk to your direct manager.
So got to the set. Everybody's kind of unloading stuff, or, you know, eventually, because we were myself and the producer were the first ones there. And then people are unloading stuff, and we're setting up, and the actors show up, and it's so much like everybody hurry up and wait, you know,
totally.
Like you're just sitting around
But it's like adrenaline filled, like I gotta get there. And then it's like
adrenaline and like 90 cups of coffee. You know?
And then you're just like, I always am on sets like, can I do it? Like, can I help? But it's not like it's going to make anything faster, but it's just like.
Right. And there's also rules about that stuff.
Right.
Like, you're not supposed to do X, Y, and Z, because that's X, Y, and Z's job, and they have to do this thing.
And it's union, and it's safety, and it's.
And so, yeah. So, well, here is my biggest takeaway. Thing or not my takeaway, but like what I would do differently the next time is, and I don't know if it was even possible, but like just take a little bit more time to try to, it actually is not possible, but a little bit more time to try to pay attention more to specific details that could be anticipated ahead of time. Like, for example, the car thing. In other words, cinematographer was like, why don't we just use my car? And I was like, great, let's do that. But instead of that, why not go, is there another solution? Because the car is appearing in the film, which means it really is a character in the film. And it's
it should be like cast.
Character development. So not that it was the wrong kind of car or anything like that. But what if it had dice hanging from the rearview mirror or a bumper sticker on the back or something? I mean, I did put like a jacket, a blazer hanging on a hanger in the
Back seat
rear window, like hanging from the handle on the side of the door. Because I was like, this is a guy who would be in the car and would take his jacket off. Because he didn't want to get it wrinkled, so he would hang it in the back seat on his way to this other thing. So a little bit of attention to detail, but just a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not mad at myself, but I'm like, next time.
Well, and that's like the entire point, right? Is also learning how to do it right. Better the next time. You know, like
one of the characters was a cop, and there was a moment at the end of the day where the two of them get into a little bit of a confrontation, and he's like, I thought we weren't going to make this a big thing. And she's like, oh, this is not a big thing. I could make this a big thing. And she's supposed to grab her
and there wasn't
radio. No, there was, but it was in the middle of her shirt for some reason. And I didn't think about it until that moment. And I was like, why the fuck is that thing in the middle of her shirt?
Right, right, right.
And that was frustrating because that would have been such a simple thing to fix.
But now continuity, you have to leave it there.
You can't change it now. And, you know, it made me think about years ago when I was working on a show. It was really the only time I did this. I was writing on a show that we were shooting up in Santa Clarita, live action show. And so I was just a writer. I was not directing. I was not producing. I just was sitting off to the side of the set. And I was so aware of every fucking detail. Like, I was going up to the costume people and saying, this guy needs to have this thing and this person needs to have this thing. And, you know, because I didn't have to focus on anything else except what was right in front of me at any
moment. Right, right. That's why it's important to have someone who that is like their whole job.
Right. And
because you can't direct and be, you can't see the forest for the trees and right. Also be in the weeds. Like,
yes, it's exactly. Too hard. And that said, yes, you want those people, like, you want the person whose job it is to make the person look like a cop know that cops wear their radios on their shoulder, not in the middle, not like a necktie in the middle of their shirt.
Right, right.
But not everybody knows that. And so it makes me go, okay, next time I need to go through a checklist mentally of every aspect of what everybody's wearing and whatever. Now I know that, you know,
right,
as opposed to going like, everybody knows what they're doing and it's going to be fine.
Sure.
It's not that, you know?
Right. Well, and I'm sure at some point too, that's why a lot of directors, like, they use the same cinematographers, the same costume designers over and over again. You get to the point where you're like, okay, you know that we are on the same page and now I could be less.
It's trust. Yeah.
Less checklisty, but with a new, working with a new whole team.
If I know this person is going to catch it and I don't have to worry about it, I want to work with that person again.
Right.
And I'm not trying to criticize anybody's job. Like, it was great to have people that I had and I was very lucky to have them. But it just made me realize how detailed.
There's so much. You know? Yeah.
And then it was also, this was a funny thing that happened because I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. You know, like, I have no idea.
Yes, you do. You have to stop saying that, though.
I guess what I'm saying is, you know how on a set you go action and then they do their acting and then it's like cut. So there's like, I don't know, 15 people on set or 20 people on set, and I'm the director, so I'm in charge. So everybody sets up for the first shot, and
you're like, go for it.
No, everybody's waiting around. Like, the actors are like, oh, what's, are we, and, you know, everybody's sitting there, and I'm like, okay. And somebody, I can't even remember who, was like, you gotta tell him to go. So I was like, action. And then somebody else was like, no, we got to wait till the camera's ready. Like,
right.
You know, so like, the sound has to be ready. The camera has to be ready. Like,
sound, speed.
Everybody has to let everybody know that everybody's ready to go. But I'm like doing this for the first time. So it's that moment where I go, action. And somebody goes, nope, we got to wait for the camera. And then I'm like, I have no idea what I'm doing, you know? And I just made myself look foolish by saying, like, it's rookie mistake, you know what
I mean? Sure, sure. But you got to start somewhere.
Yeah, might as well, you know, I should have gone to film school and then I would have known by now.
Action.
Yeah. It is funny though, because yeah, you go action and then you're like, cut. And there's like this tense moment. And then you go, okay, let's try it one more time. And maybe you guys can whatever. Or you go,
we got it. Moving on.
Cut. Moving on. And then like everybody goes, moving on. Like but you know, it was interesting. I mean, I felt like constant time pressure because we had a lot of stuff to shoot and we had only one day to do
right.
all of it.
There's no like, well, we can, you know, we can catch that tomorrow or something.
Right. Like you read about like, I don't know who, David Fincher, you know, and he's like, okay, let's do another one. And they're like, that's 27 takes of the same thing. He's like, yeah.
And it's like a guy opening a door, yeah. You know, like it's.
And I was like, I never went more than like 3 or 4 takes on anything because I was like,
we don't have time.
Yeah. Like we have so many things to shoot. We just can't do that. So someday when I'm, you know, when I have $100 million budget, then I'll start doing more takes. But also the actors were great. And that was another tricky thing was like, so the actors are actors, you know.
They're
they're like real working actors,
right?
And
right.
So
it's not like a hobby. It's
they're not people from my sketch class. You
yeah.
know?
No offense. Right. Yeah. Right.
But that is a tricky thing too because they've done so much of this. And I'm not saying they were resistant to anything I was saying or anything like that, but it is intimidating to work with people
right.
who know way more than you about what you're trying to do.
Right, right, right. Well, and you want to communicate with them, but like in ways that are extremely respectful and...
Right. So the first part of the day when I was like, what the fuck was that? Like that was probably a mistake. You know?
You did not say that.
But, you know, it just was, it was a, you know, it's communicating with people and telling them, trying to guide them to do what you want them to do when they don't necessarily see things the same way you do. And,
right.
you know, they also are just, like I said, way more experienced than I am in terms of shooting live action television / film things.
What were there ever any acting choices that were totally different than what you pictured in your head when you wrote it and when you were, you know, storyboarding it, but then you're like, that's better or like that's more interesting?
Well, one thing that happened, and it, in retrospect, it makes total sense, but at the time I was like, that's not how I saw it. Is that one of the characters is, so this is all taking place during COVID before anybody is vaccinated. So in real life, what happened was when this cop said, you know, when this cop pulled me over in Illinois, I started talking to him. And then I realized I didn't have my mask on. And this was when you still, like, when...
Right. We wore masks.
We're still wearing masks, right? Yeah, like, but like, we're still doing it. But, like, this was,
but
like...
But, like, to take your trash out.
We,
yeah,
we
yeah,
had
yeah.
a conversation, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was sitting in the car talking to him. And I realized I didn't have my mask on. And I was like, oh, I'm so sorry. And I put my mask on. And he was outside the car. And he was like... Oh, the wind is blowing the right way. I think we're fine. It's not a big deal. And in my head, I was like, that's insane that this guy is saying that. But
right.
we're also in the Midwest, so people have a totally different perception out here. I continued to wear my mask when I got into the cruiser with him and we had our whole conversation. So in my head, the character in the short would have his mask on the whole time. But the actor was like,
"You won't see
me to wear a mask the whole time."
Right.
And I was like, "I do, because that's how I always saw it in my head." And he was like, "No, I don't think that's a good idea." And so then, and I was like, "Yeah, that's true. Like, I do want to see his face." But so then I had to figure out how to make it make sense that this guy who was so concerned about that would take his mask off. And it just took like an adjustment on one line from the cop to go, it sounds so dumb, but it was like, instead of going, "I think we're fine," the cop then went, "I think we're fine. We're fine." In other words, take your mask off.
It's almost an order. Yeah.
And I also, in my head, I thought it was funny. These are so dumb, but it was when masks were not, like, it wasn't like you had to wear a K95 mask.
Right. It was just like
everybody had like weird, crazy masks.
Yeah.
And so I was really bummed because I couldn't find any of the good masks I still have around my apartment. I just found them yesterday because I was cleaning this fucking place out. But, you know, I had like a mask with rainbow dog prints on it and another one that was like a paisley bandana mask.
Right.
But the one I found was one that had a string on it that you could hang it around your neck and then you would pull it up and like pull a string back to close it. It's all cloth. No, it's like useless basically.
Right.
And it was just black. So I was a little bummed about that, but it was funny to me that the thing was just hanging around his neck the whole
time. Way, even when it's not on, it's still like, it's not, you're aware of,
you see it the whole
you're
time.
Aware.
Yeah. So that was just one, that was like one moment where it was like, you know, and there was another one too, where he was like, "I just don't think this guy would do that." I can't remember what it was, but it was like stuff like that where some of them I disagreed and I convinced him
right
the way I wanted him to, and then other ones I had to go, "Yeah, that makes sense."
Like, I don't know. You have to pick your battles.
Right. Or not even battles, but like, does it make sense? Or like, do I have a justification for it in my head that makes sense to me? Or am I just writing it like that because that's the way I want it to be? And does his argument make sense?
Right. I ask because it is a collaborative art form. Right. And so I always find that interesting. Those little details and textures of, because you're at the helm, you wrote it, you directed it, but all of these other people really make it come to life and maybe change it a little bit from the original vision. And that's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, I think that's what can elevate the work, you know? I mean, that's one thing that I've always been aware of as a writer is, and by the way, I was never a writer until this past year, but even though I was writing all that time, when you write something and then you see people actually do it, it's insane. Like, it's crazy to watch people, camera people and this person and that person. Like, I have on my, I don't know where it is. It's right up there. It's on the top of my mantle. I still haven't gotten it framed and I've had it for almost 20 years at this point. But it's a book cover because I wrote a joke in a Love Inc. script I wrote that there would be a guy sitting by himself in a diner reading a book with the title Becoming Best Friends with Yourself. And so the art department mocked up a book cover and put it on a book, and the book cover is Becoming Best Friends with Yourself, and it has like an author blurb and
it's like, amazing.
This is a stupid joke that I wrote, and all of a sudden there's a thing that exists because of this thing that I thought was funny, you know. And somebody totally. That was somebody's job, was to make that thing. And the larger point being, yes, that's what's interesting about this, is to go, here's what I think this is about and how I think it works. and to see the actors go, here's my interpretation of what you wrote. It either aligns or does not align with what you wrote or what you thought you wrote. Is there a way to move it more towards what you think, or should it be more towards what I'm thinking, you know?
Or is there like a third option that's right, even better, that it's like the two combined into something new?
So, you know, and part of the problem also for me as a first time director is when somebody goes, I don't think this works, or I don't think this makes sense, is to...
You're right. It's bad. It's like, I shouldn't have even made this.
No, the opposite. To not get like defensive and go, no, fuck you. This is what it is. You know, that's my problem, is like, I'm immediately like, oh, they're attacking me. And I'm like, no, it's just a question. Right. So let's try to.
And you might have a good answer and everything's fine.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And most of the time I do, because I really do put occasional thought into some of the things that I write. No, that was interesting, particularly with one of the actors. We had a long conversation about the script before the shoot, like a week or two before. And it was almost like, I didn't even realize how much thought I myself had put into the thing until I was answering all these questions.
And you're like, oh yeah, I know exactly that motivation. Yeah.
It was wild. So anyway, so we're shooting, it's hot, it's whatever.
Oh, right. Was it like that?
It was not during this crazy heat wave. So it was right before that. So it was, it was warm, but it was not overwhelming.
It wasn't like people.
The actors were not like sweating to death. They were like screaming.
No, it was like a medical. Yeah. Like it would have been scary.
Oh, it would have been horrible.
Did you have to have like COVID compliance officers?
We had a COVID officer on set. That was one of the first things that we did when we got there, was take a COVID test. I think I may have talked about this before. But did I talk about going to get the guns that I got for the shoot?
I think you talked about it with me at the party, but not on the show. But
Right. Yes. In between our discussions with Madam Panther's former manager.
Right. And people dying.
Yeah. So one of the things in this shoot is that there's guns. And the way things are in Hollywood now, people are very, very leery of that.
Because, as they should be.
Yeah, of what happened on that set. I made it very... So I found a guy on the internet who...
Like you just Googled, like, I need a gun.
Yeah.
The FBI's going to come knock on your door.
There's people who make their living doing that in Hollywood. You know, not gun, prop gun.
Right,
you know?
Right.
And I talked to him on the phone. And I said, I made it very clear that I wanted to be sure that not only is this not a real gun, it's not operational in any way.
There's no bullets. There's nothing. Yeah,
there's nothing. It does not.
It's a statue of a gun.
Correct. And he was like, yeah, I totally understand. I got it. And I have those. So then we were trying to get the certificate of insurance. And it said guns on the thing. And the insurance company was like, oh.
Absolutely no.
No, not no. But you have to have an armorer on set. You have to have somebody there who is, you know, skilled with all that. And I was like, no, we don't. Like, they're not real. There's no reason to have somebody who knows how to operate a gun there when you can't operate these. So then I had to have another conversation with the guy. There were people involved on my end who I guess I kind of understand this, but it bothered me in the moment, who didn't believe that I had communicated properly to this guy what I wanted. So when I called him back and I said, I just want to make sure. And he goes, yeah, we talked about this. Like you said, I said, I understood what you were saying. Like I get, you know, so it's putting me in this awkward position of like, so anyway, this is all why this is worth talking about, is because this guy has a bunch of stuff in his house over in the valley. And he's like, just come to my house. It's in, I forget where, somewhere over in the valley. And so I drive up to this guy's house to pick up my guns. And he's like, come on in. Like, he's at the front door. He's like, come on in. And I go in and I'm sitting in his living room, and his entire living room, everywhere you look, it's just bristling with guns and swords and knives and halberds and morning stars and
maces,
like every weapon you could possibly, nunchucks, you know, like just throwing stars everywhere you look. There's, and the other thing he had was giant pornographic posters everywhere.
Like, oh my God.
Big posters of women with incredibly large breasts wearing nothing. And it just was like, this is a fucking movie set.
Yeah, that's like, crazy.
So the two of us are just sitting there having a conversation. Turns out he's from the Bronx. I'm like, yeah, I went to high school in the Bronx. We're talking about that, you know. It was, and then I was like, this is an incredible collection. He goes, oh, this is just my office. You should see my warehouse. And I was
Oh my God.
I was like, yeah, I actually should see that. he specializes in historical weapons. So he has all these weapons from various periods of history. So of course I was like fascinated by that. And we were talking about that for a while.
Ship novels.
Yes. When I make my pirate movie, I'm going to go to that guy. But one of the results of that was, so the guns did not function, but they looked incredible.
Right.
And one of the things that he did for me was, he was like, you can pull the trigger if you want, and this is what happens. So one of the guns, you pull the trigger and it just clicks and moves a little bit. The gun moves. And he's like, we do that for tracking when they're putting in digital effects. They want to see.
So they know exactly when.
And the other one didn't, the trigger didn't move, but it was a pistol grip shotgun, and you could rack, you know, the way you rack a shotgun. It didn't do anything, but it just moved back and forth. It was a moving part. I was like, this is great. We're not doing any of that stuff in my shoot, but it's funny to have. And they really did look incredible.
How did you bring them? Like, did you put them in a briefcase or something? Like,
that was a tricky thing. Yeah. I had to buy a briefcase. No.
You don't want to have just like what looks like a shotgun on the front seat of your car.
He goes, you gotta keep this in the trunk. And if you get pulled over, you got to tell the police that you have not a real gun, but you have a replica in the back of, you know, in the trunk. But they were in, I mean, they have gun cases, like literally like vinyl, not vinyl, but some kind of ballistic nylon material that you keep them in. I had also gotten from him a, this was another funny thing where I was like, I forget what the distinction was, but I said, do you have like a bulletproof vest? And he was like, do you want a bulletproof vest or do you want body armor? And I was like, I said, do you have a tactical vest? And there's a difference, because a tactical vest is a vest that you keep like ammunition and stuff on, as opposed to a bulletproof vest, which is just the thing,
right?
That bulky thing that goes over and whatever. I was like, no, that's the thing I want. I don't want a tactical vest. He's like,
right.
Oh, you said tactical vest. So I got one so you can hold grenades and bullets. And I
was like, Oh my God. Oh my God.
So in my trunk, I had two guns and a bulletproof vest. And then one of the things you have to do is you have to do a safety demonstration on set the day of the shoot.
Right.
And so I could have done the safety demonstration, because I had already used the weapons, knew how they functioned, and knew the guy had shown them to me. But the producer was like, I'll do it. I'll do it. I'll do the thing. What do they do? And I showed the producer what I did. So it's time for the safety demonstration. The producer goes, this gun doesn't work. This pistol, I mean, this trigger fires, but it all it does is move it. It's that's for tracking, whatever. And then this shotgun, the trigger doesn't work, but you can rack it, and the producer just rips the entire thing apart. Like, in other words, and I had left a deposit with this guy, and he had told me that each of these guns is worth $750.
Oh my God.
And so all of a sudden I was like, oh, well, there's another $750 that we'll have to pay for this fucking gun that just got pulled apart. And so when I took it back to him, so the gun was just sitting there in pieces the entire day. And finally,
so you didn't even use it in the shoot?
Well, towards the end of the day, I was like, there has to be somebody here who knows how to put puzzles together and give it to the prop person and let them try to figure out how to fit it back together in a way that makes sense. So they did that and we used it and it looked great on camera. But then when I took it back to this guy in his pornographic weapon.
Oh, he was like, this is wrong.
Well, I said to him, I go, this fell apart while we were showing it to people. I said, the producer, who is, 4 foot nothing and weighs 25 pounds, just immediately pulled it apart. He goes, that's why you don't have producers touch this stuff.
He did not.
It was Eddie Pepitone. Yeah, he did. And I was like, you're right. I should have done it myself, because I knew how to do it in a way that would make sense.
Right.
And not pull it apart. But it ended up being fine as far as I know. It was definitely a weird moment because he was like, now I got to get it repaired. I got to fix this. It's supposed to go out later this week. I got to fix it. Like, I got to.
Sorry.
Yeah. And I was like, does that mean I owe you anything? Or.
Right.
He just never responded to that. And he gave me back my deposit check. And that was it. We were done in our separate ways. So, like I said, when I make my pirate movie, that guy is going to be involved.
He's going to be like the biggest line item in the budget.
Right. Well, he also, he also works as an armorer. So if I ever needed somebody to be on set for that stuff, he would be able to do that. So then there was stuff like, the middle of the day, it's time for lunch. And we had bought, hundreds of dollars worth of sandwiches for everybody to eat for lunch.
From where?
From, I don't know, one of the supermarkets, Pavilions or Ralph's or something. Just like
a bunch. Like a party sub almost.
Not a part. No, see, that was where I was a little bit lost because producer kept saying a sandwich platter from Ralph's or something like that. And I was like, that's what I was thinking. They're like, you're talking about a party sub? Because that is fucking disgusting. Like, I would not, if I was working on a set, I would not want to be like, oh, let me take the eighth piece of this party sub. So I started.
But I mean, it's probably like a party sub that they sliced up and put on a platter. Like,
no, it was individual sandwiches wrapped up and distributed. But the upshot of the whole thing was everybody goes to lunch and I was doing something. I don't remember what I was like making notes or something. And like 3 minutes after lunch started, the producer came out to me with a quarter of a sandwich and was like, I hope you like tuna fish because this is all that's left. So that was the only thing I had for the entire 12-hour shoot was a quarter of a tuna fish sandwich. But then I started eating from the craft services snack tray, which is not, sustaining or
right. It's not whole food.
It's not protein of any kind.
Right,
it's
right.
Like chips. But I was like, I'm fucking starving.
And licorice.
So yeah, we shot the whole day and we got to the end of the day and there's a shot at the end of the whole shoot that is a gate closing. And where we were shooting, one of the things that was cool about it was these people. And this to me feels like a very LA thing where people have a gate that closes across their driveway.
Oh, yeah. Well,
and so this was a gate that closed across somebody's driveway. So we get to, and it's like the closing shot of the whole short. It kind of separates the guy from the cop, and he turns around and, you know, all this other stuff happens. And they're like, oh yeah, the gate isn't closing. Like the gate opened when we got there at the beginning of the day, but now it's stuck and it's not moving. And it was like, okay, what happens now? And again, it was that thing of like,
Have someone push it or
No, you couldn't. Nobody didn't work. It just, it was like, that's gone. Okay. How else can we indicate that this is? So I guess we'll see in the edit whether that works or not, but we could not get the fucking gate to work. And these are people, you know, there's like lighting people there, like unscrewing the entire mechanism and going like, I don't know if the chain is off or what's happening. Why is this? It turned out what it was at one point, one of the lights had blown a fuse in the house and they reset the whole fuse box. So everything was working. But what somebody didn't realize was that there were actually two fuse boxes in the house. So the other one was also blown and that was the one that controlled the gate. So by the next day it was working fine. But anyway, we shot the whole thing. End of the day. I had driven the car there for the cinematographer's car because the cinematographer was driving the grip truck. So everybody's leaving. Everybody's gone. Tail lights is what they say on the call sheet. Tail lights 7 p.m. or 7:30 p.m. or whatever it is. It was tail lights at like 8 p.m. Everybody's gone except for myself and the producer. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to go. The car won't start.
Because you've been opening the door all day long, or
I guess I still don't know what happened. But yeah, this electric car would not start, and luckily, I have really good health insurance, but also very good auto insurance, and so they will come and do something to even a car that's not mine if I borrowed that car. So they sent somebody, which took, you know, close to an hour for a truck to get there. And the guy was like, oh, I can just charge up this battery and it'll work. So he opened the hood and we, you know, one of the problems is we don't even understand how electric cars work.
Right. You don't even know what to look at or.
No. It's not like a regular battery where you're like, oh, I can just jump start it.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, oh, let me charge. So he goes and he's looking at it. He's like, oh, no, this battery is charged. It's the other battery. I can't do anything about that. That's a dealership problem. I can't charge the other battery. So now we're just sitting there and waiting, trying to get in touch with the cinematographer because maybe the person whose car it is knows something
like,
about
it. There might be like, oh, it's tricky. You jiggle the thing.
And that was not the case. So now 2 hours has gone by. So it's now
you should be home
at night. Yeah. And I don't know how I'm getting home even, you know, because this is the car I've driven to the set from my apartment. And also it's like, this is people's house. Like, are we leaving this car in their driveway?
Yeah.
So we did end up leaving the car in their
driveway. Oh my God.
We moved it. We like rolled it over a little bit so they could still fit their car into the driveway. And they were very, very gracious about it. And, you know, then it was a whole 2-day thing of like trying to get this plug from Amazon that would charge.
Oh my God.
And it wouldn't charge the other battery. And then I had to go get the cinematographer and drive back up there.
Well, and was the cinematographer just without a car those 2 days?
I can't even honestly at this point, I don't remember. No, I think what happened was the cinematographer, basically the upshot of the whole thing was that it cost an extra $1,000 or something. And part of that was Ubers for the cinematographer during that time. And yeah, it was just like crazy. Very frustrating.
You're exhausted.
Well, that was the other thing. Not only was I exhausted, which I was completely destroyed.
Mm-hmm. Well, because you get to a point and you're like, I know it's going to be a long day, but like, this is the finish line that I'm going towards.
Right, right.
And then to go 2 hours past that, it's like it's almost like you have given yourself a certain amount of steam and you're like, I'm out, baby. I'm out.
On top of which, and I still don't know exactly what happened, during that 2 hour period, I had some kind of crazy allergic reaction. So my eyes swole shut.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So I'm sitting there with the producer and the person whose house it is going, I'm really sorry about this, but something weird is going on with my face.
Oh my God.
And I don't know if it was like a plant in the bushes or they had dogs. So it might've been, you know, I might've gotten like a dog hair in my eye or something, but it was crazy. But luckily we were stuck there long enough that happened.
It went all the way back.
By the time we were leaving, everything was kind of back to normal again.
How did you get home?
The producer drove.
Oh my God.
My place. But then that meant that we still had all that other shit to deal with the next day. So it was, you know, it was a lot and it goes on. So this thing better be fucking good. I'll tell you that much. But I, you know, it's, I'm glad I did it and I want to do it again. I feel like I learned a lot and we'll see what happens. I think it's going to end up being cool. I mean, I have some music to send to this editor. I spoke to somebody yesterday who's an incredibly talented animator who's going to do titles for it again.
Amazing.
Again, like somebody that I'm just like calling in favors from. So yeah, we'll see, you know.
It's exciting.
Yeah. So that's my checking in is if you're going to direct, pay attention to the details and make sure you bring your own lunch.
Right. And car.
And car. Yeah. Well, that would go under details, I think, because that was, and you know, it's that thing. Like I talk about this in my writing classes of, and it's goofy, but it makes sense to me, is like sometimes when you're writing something, you feel a strange disturbance in the force and you have to listen to that, you know, you have to like
your
accept spidey that something sense is off. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, your spidey sense is tingling is another way to put it. And I definitely like, we had this discussion about the DP's car a week before and I was like, great, great. And like 3 days before I was like, it's a little weird. So my spidey sense was tingling. I felt a strange disturbance in the force, but I was like, no, it's fine. I ignored it.
Right.
And it turned out to be such a huge problem, you know?
And it's tough though, because in that prep, I'm sure there's a lot of things that were stressful and you're like,
it was just one less thing to worry about.
Right. You know? Right. Right.
And I guess,
well, and it's like, is this my spidey sense or am I just like stressing out over nothing?
Right.
I'm saying
that thought never occurred to me, like that part of it never came to me. And I think if I was like, am I just stressing out over nothing, I would be able to answer that, because I would have, you know, again, it's like I was talking about before, like I would have specific, no, it's not my car and it's an unfamiliar car,
and it's not like a prop car, it's somebody's car that you have a something relationship we picked with
on purpose. It's just a random throw in because it was the easiest, you know, it was the path of least resistance.
Right.
So maybe the path of least resistance is not the path.
Not always.
Resist the path. So that's it. I'm done.
Oh, that's a great checking in. For my checking in, I teased this in the last episode, but I had my crazy week of going back to the office. We're back in the office Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays, but Monday all day long, I had a shoot in West Hollywood. So it was like, there was no easing into it. It was diving into the deep end. And,
which you want to dive into the deep end, because when you dive into the shallow end,
yeah, it hurts.
Injuries. Yeah.
Well, speaking of head injuries. So Monday morning, like, I also was so aware of the fact that this week was going to be so different, and how, I think we've talked about it, like how just like getting your ass out of the house is difficult. So I tried to minimize that. Like I did like cheesy stuff that I haven't done my whole, like, I've never been this type A, but I was like, this is what I'm wearing on Monday. This is what I'm wearing on Tuesday. Like, it's one less thing for me to have
you
to worry.
You never did that before? I've been doing that for years.
Really? But like, so that my brain doesn't have to make any decisions at 7 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. And
Zuckerberg says, just wear the same thing every day. Then you never have to think about it. It saves you a lifetime of decision-making.
And Steve Jobs, a lot of those CEO guys. But guess what? I like
Ronald McDonald never wears a different
clothes. That's true. And he's so successful. But I like clothes. So it's like, I don't want to completely eliminate that for my life.
You don't want to just walk around in a gray t-shirt and blue jeans all the time?
No. But so I did all that. I prepped. I like tried to anticipate anything, like little things, like, okay, my charger for the laptop is already in the backpack. I already filled up the water bottle. Like I tried to make the morning as seamless as possible. And for Monday,
hey,
I had,
you know what makes the morning seamless?
Folgers.
Seamless.
What is, I don't care at all.
When I said that, I was thinking it was a food delivery service. Yeah. I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. I think seamless is actually you like get clothes from them on a regular
basis. I don't know.
So you wouldn't even have to pick out what you were going to wear on Monday. Tuesday. They would be like, this is what you're wearing Monday. We know what your fashion predilections are.
But so Monday was different because I wasn't even going to the office. I was going to a house in West Hollywood for a shoot. And there was like that variable of like, for me with my anxiety and driving, it's like, okay, I don't 100% know where I'm going. I don't 100% know where I'm parking, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I had to eat breakfast at home. Technically I could get my ass out the door when I'm at the office and there's like food and tea and coffee there. So I had to like really be buttoned up, and I was proud of myself. I got out the door and I was making good time. I figured, like, they on the call sheet, they were like, you could either park on the street and come get a permit, or there's this parking lot a few blocks away. And I was like, parking lot a few blocks away it is. Like, I'd rather walk than at all be like, did you mean this street?
Right.
And
no parallel parking for you.
No parallel parking. Everything was going splendidly. I was truly a quarter mile away from the parking lot, and I got rear-ended. I was just like,
God damn it.
I know. I was like, welcome back to commuting, Amber. And have you ever been rear-ended?
Yes.
Okay. It's so strange because your brain like doesn't catch up to what's happening at first, because it's just like a really loud noise and a jolt. Like I almost immediately figured out what's going on, but there was a moment where I was like, I don't even understand what's going on right
because
now.
you're not seeing it, so you don't know what it was,
right? And it was the thing where we were on Sunset and it was trafficy and the light turned green, but like the car in front of me hadn't gone yet. So I didn't throw on the gas. Mm-hmm. And the girl behind me, I found out later, she was like looking down, she's probably looking at her phone. And then she looked up and saw it was green and just kind of floored it. And I was like,
what a dipshit.
And I was like shaking. It's nerve like, yeah. And it was so loud. I thought my car was totaled. And I got out and it was like, you couldn't even tell. There's like the slightest.
Did she get out of her car?
She did. Yeah. We both pulled over. She's like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I was just like, what happened? And then she told me what she just said. And she was wearing workout clothes. It was very LA where she was like, I just got out of hot yoga. I should have waited 20 minutes. My friend always waits 20 minutes after hot yoga to drive. And I should start doing that. I'm so sorry.
I'm surprised because my experience in those situations, and it's happened to me, I don't know, 3 times maybe in the 20 years I've lived out here.
They immediately start blaming you.
Yeah. Oh, that was you. That was your fault. You did that. And I'm like, you hit me from behind. How could it be my fault?
Right.
You
know? Right.
But that's good that she was willing to.
Well, I think it was a peak me interaction. I feel like the two of us may have handled the situation differently, but we finally, like, we pulled over and we were talking and like we exchanged numbers. Cause I was like, I don't even know what you fully do in this scenario, but we exchanged numbers and nice. I was like kind of shaking and I
digits.
Was, yeah. And she was like, you have a really cute outfit on. I was like, thank you. And then she's like, I'm just so happy that you're like a beautiful, nice person. I was scared someone was going to punch me in the face. And I was like, oh, like I was laughing because later I was like, I was so happy that the person who rear-ended me liked me. Like, that is so sick. That is peak, like, people pleaser Amber. You know what I mean?
And by the way, I should make it clear that even though everybody always blamed me for whenever I've gotten into a thing like that, they have also made it clear
that you had a cute outfit on.
Correct.
And I was, I was like, yeah, this is my first day working not at home. So like, and she's like, oh my God. Anyway, but I get to the parking lot and I park and I want to just sit in a dark room and process what happened. Mm-hmm. But I will be doing the exact opposite. I will be walking onto a set where there are 10 people in every room I go to and children and like noise and
some idiot director who's going action. And right. Like, can you just wait until the sound is ready?
Well, and I'm not good. I have to figure it out, but like, I either just don't let people in on shit like that at all. Or I just like blurt it. Like I'm not, how do other people do it? I guess is what I'm asking. Like, how do you like naturally be like, oh, I got in a car accident. Like
I write it on a piece of paper and hang it around my neck.
But so because it was a shoot, I had to immediately go to the nurse and get a COVID test. And the nurse was like, how are you? I was like, I just got in a car accident.
By the way, I love that you're saying the nurse.
She was a nurse.
But like, it makes it sound like you're in school. Like,
I know.
Go to the nurse. And and
I don't know. Like, it was just a lot of things going on, and I had to jump on a call even though I was at the set. And I don't know. Like, I just
that is peak LA, by the way.
I know.
Jump on a call. I had to jump on a call.
But
I'm on set, baby. What's going on?
It was a good day. It was like, I feel your pain because yours must have been so much more intense because I was the client. Like, we hired a crew and I was there to be like, yeah, I like that. You know what I mean? Like, it was like an ad agency. I was the client. I was right. DreamWorks. I think I was listed on the call sheet as client.
You were the person in Mad Men who was sitting in the room and who was like, Don, we were thinking a little bit more like this. And then Don was like, I'm drunk. I was out at lunch. So
totally.
I don't give a shit what you want.
100%. Yeah. Totally. And it was also really funny because I've never been like, it wasn't like a crazy powerful position, but I've never been in that position on a set. Mm-hmm. So like, I would offhandedly be like, oh, you know, her hair is in her eyes. And like, somebody was running across the room with a barrette. I was like, oh, like,
Yes. Now it's too far out of her eyes.
But, that said, like, I was there all day just watching them do different setups and approving things. And I was exhausted. And I had like the least amount to do on that set, basically. But like, to your point about like, cause you know, we were starting to like run out of time. We were dealing with kids. So there's like a very specific time frame where they're allowed to work, as it should be. Like, even that much, like when I left, I was like, I don't know if it's ethical to work with kids.
It's
like,
insane for at all.
like what are we doing? What are we doing?
Makes no sense.
One of the girls we cast that I was very excited about, I thought she was 3. I guess that's her size, but she was 2. I was like, that's a baby. There's a baby.
I heard you thought I had too much hair in my eyes. So I just wanted to introduce myself and say hi in case you're doing something else after this that maybe I'd be right for.
But they had, I will say, the age group, like the 3 was the youngest. They're mostly like 5 and 6. And the cute thing about that age group is that they had no, like they weren't embarrassed at all or what am I trying to say? Like the 3 of them, those older girls, just started playing and were best friends. Like there was no self-consciousness. They weren't pretending when the camera was rolling. Like their breaks looked exactly the same as when they were working. Like they just were like, yeah, we're playing with stuff and we're telling each other secrets and we're giggling. And I was like, that's cool. Cause I feel like any other age group, slightly younger, they can't do anything. And any age older, they're like, do they like me? Is my shirt weird? So there was something cute about that. But I just kept being like, can I start like prepping the toys and the looks
she
for the next?
She wants to prep the toys. She wants to prep the toys.
No, but just like, everyone wants to get out of here and I'm sitting on my hands. Like, can I do something? And yeah, it was I came home so tired and I truly almost did nothing. And then I had to go to work the next day and everyone was like, isn't this crazy? And I was like, I started tired. This is your guys' first day in the office and I'm so exhausted. Then Wednesday, I was even more tired. But that night I went with Barbara and Tess to Jagged Little Pill, the Alanis Morissette musical at the Pantages. And it was opening night and I didn't realize that. And Alanis Morissette was there and spoke at the end. Oh, and I was like screaming, like it was unreal. And then I had to go to work the next day in the office. I was like, this is impossible. How do people do this? This is crazy. So I was so happy for Friday. Like the whole like TGIF thing has taken on a whole other meaning. But
you're back in the swing of things.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I will say that I think, I don't know how to say this without sounding like a complete asshole, but maybe I just will sound like a complete asshole, but like a lot.
Isn't it ironic?
Don't you think? A big, for me, a strength is like vibe. Honestly. Yeah. And I think in person people get that more. So I could tell that that being in person will be good for my career, even though I'm exhausted. Like I don't even have full
evidence. She seems different in 3 dimensions.
I don't even have full evidence.
I can see more than her head. She's got a whole body under there.
It's like an intangible feeling. It may be the spidey sense you were talking about. I was just like,
You know what, Donnie? It's not just the body. It's the vibe. She's got a vibe to her. You don't get the vibe.
I told you I was going to sound like an asshole, but do you know what?
You don't get the vibe on Zoom, but in real life, you're like, oh, there's a vibe here.
It's out of control. But Does that make any sense, though, what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I just have this feeling that it will be good for my career. But that said, I still have to do the tasks that I was doing before at home. And like, I'm jumping on calls, very Hollywood. And yeah. I don't have an office. I'm at a cubicle. And I'm still on a Zoom call. And there's people like, bah, 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 da, 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 da. Like, and I was like, this is really hard. I don't like this. And I'm doing like complicated tasks. And I don't have the controlled environment that I'm used to. So I know that I will get used to it. But it's just like,
it is a lot to deal with, because we've been dealing with this other shit for so long. You know,
we're
used to things the way they are.
And my team is lovely. I love everyone I work with. They don't listen to this. It doesn't matter. But I feel the need to say that. But like my direct boss, we work really closely together.
Freudian slip, calling him a moss.
Yes. But
which side of the tree he's growing on, and that is north.
But like I am an introvert who's pretty good at being extroverted, but I still need a lot of downtime and solo time. And so now I'm with people all day long and we, you know, meeting. And then he was like, I'm going to go to lunch. And I was like, you should do that. I have to finish this. And he's like, okay. And he just kind of like sat on my desk while I was working and kept talking to me. And I was like, you should really go to lunch. Like he was being nice. He was waiting for me. But I was like, I need you to get the fuck out of my face. Like I can't handle this.
Hey, listen, you know how I have a great vibe? You don't have that right.
I'm going to turn it off if you're not careful.
You've got a cute outfit, but you have a bad vibe.
And I got, at the risk of sounding like I'm just copying you, but I got to do some sort of like quasi directing stuff on Thursday. And I really, really, really loved it. And I want to do that more and not all the dumb other tasks I have to do. Action. But yeah, I got to say action. I got to do all of that. That's why I was laughing when you were saying all of that. But because we really dove right into everything, but we're creating some like featurettes with talent all together for the first time, because we've been doing everything like via Zoom. And I got to be the one like asking them the questions, and I really enjoyed it. And like the whole PR team happened to be there, and they're like, you're really good at that. I was like, oh, thanks. Like there was kids who were nervous and stuff.
Yeah, you like my vibe? You like my vibe?
No, but like it's fun because I do think that is a strength of mine. I'm like, can I do this more often? Anyway, that is my checking in.
Mean being an on-air personality, you should be...
No, I want to be behind the camera. Why does that make you sad?
I thought you were saying that you were interviewing people on camera.
No. I was the one like making them comfortable and telling them like what they were supposed to say next and asking them the questions and stuff like that. No, I was not on camera and I do not want to be. But yeah, it was a long week. I feel like I'm still recovering. That's why we were supposed to record on Thursday and I was like, I'm a zombie.
Yeah.
I would be of no use. But we'll see how next week goes. Like maybe I'll get more and more used to it.
I mean, it's a crapshoot. Who knows? Could go either way. Maybe you won't get rear-ended, you know?
Yeah. I feel like this is like a good length for a show. So do you want to just do like a quick parting shot?
Sure. Here's my parting shot. First of all, I saw a thing on the news yesterday, and it was an elderly woman, and she was crying because she couldn't believe that Queen Elizabeth died. And I was like, what? The woman was 96 years old.
Are you doing
Why are
stand-up?
You so shocked that she died? So that's one thing. Then here's my other thing is that very exciting news that September 27th is the season 2 premiere of La Brea. So I don't know if you've seen the trailer yet.
I haven't.
Look it up. Oh, okay. It's amazing. It looks like it will live up to
the hype. Hell yeah.
We're going to have a lot to talk about once that starts up again. So it won't be next episode, but it'll be the episode after that.
Okay.
So people at home, catch up, watch season two, La Brea.
Well, it's going to just be the first episode, right? Because it
airs. They got to watch season one so they know why these things are happening. Why is there a rhinoceros running around?
If it's anything like season one, the first half will have all of the special effects and then it'll just be like, it'll drop out suddenly.
That's my parting shots.
I love it. My parting shots is, it is, this is so boring, but it's true. It has cooled down and I love it. I was wearing a sweatshirt. I had a blanket on. I put a robe on this morning and slippers. Like, it feels like fall and I love it. And I have a coworker. Have you ever owned Uggs?
No.
I have not ever before this week. I have a coworker who has much bigger feet than me and somehow became in possession of a pair of like brand new black Uggs and has held on to them for the past 3 years while we were in the pandemic to give to me. And I would have just like donated them. Like, I feel like that is dedication that is admirable or crazy. I don't know. But she brought them to me this week at work. And so this weekend I've been wearing them and I guess I'm just like leaning in to all of like the basic girl qualities. Like, I like fall. I like Uggs. Like, who cares? Like,
I have a cute outfit on.
Right? Exactly.
Well, lucky you that you got some Uggs. I'd like to, you know, if Uggs, if you're listening,
we can sponsor
a podcast. It's done over 100 episodes because we did our 100th episode 10 years
ago. A decade ago. That's wild. That's so crazy.
In this very room.
Wow. But yeah, I think that's our show. So smash that like button. Tell your friends.
Smash that like and reply. Hit comment. Leave a password.
TikTok about us.
Yes. And we'll see you next time on The Long Shot.
Bye.
It's a podcast. Where's Joe and Jamie?
But now imagine my face when the soda exploded, which, by the way, you were the first one to notice. You said my life's a sitcom and this is a spin-off and it's pilot season and I just got Botox and you're the shift switcher. I don't want no talk of it. I don't live off the land. I just live on top of it. It's hard, but it's certain. It's quick and it's sordid. Commander, come over, come on. It's important. You're here, then you're gone. And I caught you flipping around. It's hard when the station is on. And you are the talk of the town. I'll tell ya, it tears me in two. When you choose to dance in my mind like you do. But to tell you the truth, it never got too much to view.